versus Administar Federal Inc. Good morning, Mr. Falk.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Steve Falk. I'm here for Donna Miller, who's the plaintiff appellant in this case. I'll try to be brief as the last one at the long line this morning.
You take the time that you need.
Thank you. Ms. Miller filed a complaint of age and sex discrimination under the ADEA in Title VII, and we're up here in Chicago today after the district court in Indianapolis granted summary judgment against her and for Administar, which is the defendant in this case. We're here to argue, Your Honors, that Donna Miller has presented sufficient evidence on three different points, enough to raise a genuine issue of material fact to get before a jury as to whether Administar unlawfully discriminated against her when it terminated her employment at the end of 2002, roughly October of 2002. The three points that I'd like to bring before the court's attention today deal with performance, replacement, and pretext. Performance being the second of the four prima facie elements under both the ADEA and Title VII, replacement being or correlating with the fourth element was the individual replaced with a younger or other sex person, and pretext being the post-legitimate or alleged legitimate business decision proffered by the defendant.
Well, other than the fact that she was replaced by a man, what evidence do you have that she was discriminated against for being a female?
Okay, she was replaced by a significantly younger male, so we have age and we have sex. Specifically, the way the court looked at this, and this is sort of the difficult orientation of this case that I'm going to attempt to clarify, the district court collapsed the second and fourth elements under the standard that was articulated in the Radu case, claiming that this was a disciplinary or a disparate discipline case. And we believe, Your Honor, to answer your question, that the evidence of being replaced with a male employee or with a younger employee, either one of those, is sufficient to establish that fourth prong, the replacement with an individual outside the protected class. And here's why. The court said that because this was a disparate discipline case, that second prong or second element, performing one's job up to the expectations of the employer, gets collapsed with the fourth one, which is the replacement prong. And that is the case because, as the court has previously held in other cases which are factually different from this case, that you end up having to find individuals in similar positions working the same job, performing the same duties, who misperformed at roughly the same period of time, but one person was treated one way because he or she was in a protected class and the other one was not. We don't have that here at all, and this is the point that I really can't stress enough this morning. We have an individual, Donna Miller, who was fired from her employment because she was convicted of a felony. Her termination didn't have anything to do with her job performance. And that is the issue, I believe, that we're trying to use to separate those second and fourth elements again. Her termination comes from extracurricular conduct, not from whether she was producing widgets correctly, which she didn't do. She worked for Administar, which was a Medicare administrative services provider.
That doesn't mean it was a non-disciplinary termination.
Well, I think that that's a good question, Your Honor, and let me point this out. There are a couple of, I think, basic sub-questions that will challenge whether or tell us whether this was a disciplinary discharge. First, was Miller discharged for anything regarding her performance? And the answer to that is no.
Well, one of the work rules is no felony convictions.
Well,
and she picked up a felony conviction, and so she was discharged for violating that work rule. So it's a disciplinary termination.
Okay. Well, I understand that is what the district court did. However, I think that we need to look beyond what the job expectations are, because previous case law has talked about performance. And this is a really important point. Was her felony conviction in any way related to her job performance, which is a fair question.
What difference does any of this make under the anti-discrimination laws at issue here?
Because individuals who are terminated for, and I'm calling it extracurricular, I couldn't call upon my Latin education to come up with a better term, extracurricular offenses, okay, offenses that are not on the job or dealing with any of the terms of doing the job. When a person is fired for that type of an offense off the job, the individual has those second and fourth elements collapsed, and the court, which you can see in the court's decision, specifically on page 10.
This is a de novo standard of review, so
it doesn't matter. I'm just using this for example. The court sets up a tautology that the plaintiff can't get around. The court said Ms. Miller cannot establish the second element of her prima facie case because this is a disparate discipline case. And then when she tried to establish the fourth element, pursuant to Olson versus Northern, the court said she can't establish the fourth element because she didn't establish the second element. And what I am pointing out is there's a factual difference between all these cases that led to the idea of disparate discipline, because those involve people working on the job, doing things differently, and being disciplined for it on the job than their counterparts. And I totally understand the necessity of having an identity between that person in that position and a coworker. But with respect to the individual who did something off the job, and I'm not defending felonies, I don't do criminal work at all. But for someone who was terminated for an off-the-job offense, then it's fair to ask the question, is this a disciplinary action? Or is it, as the defense has admitted, a violation of a standard of off-the-job behavior?
Well, she wasn't meeting legitimate employment expectations, one of which is you will not commit felonies.
I understand. Am I stepping on your thought?
No.
Okay.
I'm just trying to, understand your
argument. That's an off-the-job thing. That is one of several factors listed in standards of behavior. That does not have to do with her performance of her job.
And well, sure it does, because it's a legitimate employment expectation.
Okay.
That you will not be a criminal.
Right. And this is one of the problems, the muddiness in the I think the district court's thinking here is that the court did not permit her ever to get to the second element, which would have to deal with whether she was performing well. And the undisputed evidence was she was doing her job well. She had never been disciplined.
Let's take this outside of all the constructs of the elements of McDonnell Douglas, etc.
Sure.
Is there any evidence at all that she was fired because of her sex or because of her age?
Yes, because although they claim it's a longstanding policy, they just implemented it 2 years before they used it on her, and they had never used it on anybody else at that point.
That's not
maybe
evidence.
They had nobody else that was
This is part of it. There is another list. They don't require individuals to respond with respect to acknowledgement forms. There are literally dozens of cases that they have admitted to where they didn't follow up with these individuals.
That's not evidence of sex discrimination or age discrimination.
That's correct if you collapse those two elements.
All the elements. Tell me what evidence you have that she was discriminated against.
She was replaced by a substantially younger
male employee. Enough on its own.
According to Olson, that plus one other element can be enough.
No, but you don't have anything else other than that, and Olson had a whole lot more.
Well, no, Olson. I'm sorry, I only have 1 minute left, so I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may. But Olson,
why don't you answer that, and I'll give you that minute.
Okay, I appreciate that. Olson involved a stray remark and a replacement by a substantially younger employee.
Who was underqualified.
Right. But they also said he had better academic credentials, so I think that those cancel each other out. But with respect to, so what we had here was a stray 5-month-old comment and replacement by a substantially younger employee. What we have in our case is replacement by a substantially younger employee and an entire alleged mandatory, prohibitory, no felon policy, which has never been written that way, never been enforced that way, and has only been enforced against this particular woman. We think that that's like Olson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Folt. Mr. Weingartner.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Rick Weingartner. I represent Administrar Federal in this matter.
Has anyone else at Administrar been fired under the no felony policy?
Yes, indeed, Your Honor. On two occasions prior to Ms. Miller's termination, in the record, two employees in the Indianapolis office in Indiana have been terminated. That can be found both at the supplemental appendix tab or exhibit T, as well as exhibit M in the summary judgment appendix, docket 31. And that fact alone helps establish that indeed we do have a policy. It's written, it's been used in the past, and most importantly, Ms. Miller was aware of that policy before she was terminated. The record is undisputed that after her arrest, before her conviction, she was told on several occasions that if you have a felony conviction, you will be terminated. And so there is no reason to believe that the rule itself does not exist. So there's no reason to believe that the rationale for her termination is pretextual. And as Judge Sykes mentioned, obviously regardless of whether we use McDonnell Douglas or which version of McDonnell Douglas we use, the question is there a logical reason to believe that Ms. Miller was terminated because of her sex or her age? And there's simply no evidence in the record that either of those protected characteristics were behind the termination. If the court has no further questions.
If I could just clarify something, it's my understanding that the no felony policy was also some sort of a requirement under Indiana insurance law or a requirement under the Indiana Insurance Commissioner's regulations or something?
It is the company's understanding that the Indiana Department of Insurance has set forth an interpretation of a federal law that says, according to the Indiana Department of Insurance, if you have a felony conviction, you may not be employed in an insurance company. The company, obviously aware that its regulator has that ruling, has decided that, well, we're not going to mess with the regulator and the sanctions that go along with a contrary understanding. And so they enforce in the state of Indiana that rule. It was enforced both before Ms. Miller was terminated and in Ms. Miller's case.
Thank you, Mr. Weingartner.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Falk, I'm going to give you that minute I promised you.
Thank you, Your Honor. The company's understanding is great talk, but it's not found anywhere in the record, just like this prohibitory, mandatory policy is not written anyplace. In fact, the only place that it's referred to, it says may. It's permissive. It's not mandatory. It would, and that's not in dispute. We believe that that Title VII and the ADEA have always permitted a jury to infer in permissive situations, particularly when one is replaced with a younger male, substantially younger male employee, whether that happened because in the permissive situation, the individual was discriminated against in violation of the law. And thank you for your time if you have no further questions.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Folk. Thank you, Mr. Weingartner. The case will be taken under advisement, and this court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.